We are live, Chris Denman and the fellas from Project Wake Up, here in studio for a very special conversation about their documentary and several issues at hand. So we want to go a little longer form on this. So thank you guys all for tuning in from the show. Be sure to catch us Monday through Friday on the air, 4 to 7 on 590 The Fam, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. Guys, what's up? Introduce yourselves, man. What's up, Danny? How are you?
Chris, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. I'm Danny Kurth. Been on Project Wake Up since about November of 2014. But I wasn't the idea guy, so I definitely want to hand it off to Alex first.
Absolutely. What's up, Alex?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having us. My name is Alex Lindley. I am the founder of Project Wake Up. The idea came to me in October of 2014. Right now we'll briefly go to the short story, and we raised over $20,000 with our first campaign. And with that, we were able to hire our incredibly talented director, Nate Townsend. And I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you, Alex. My name is Nate.
Good to meet you, Nate. Yeah, you're a talented guy from what I've seen, man. Everything looks impactful, and it looks like it was very effectively shot. I'm not an expert, but I like the way things look just from a artistic standpoint. And then, gosh, it's not exactly the easiest topic to tackle. So can you give us a little bit on what you're working with on Project Wake Up?
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky enough that and blessed that Alex Lindley called me to work on this. And we had enough money to hire a great crew. The cinematographer, Kyle Karpinski, who shot it, is incredibly talented. I work with him quite a bit. It was an incredibly tough 6 to 8 weeks working on that. But I actually have dealt with tragedy myself. I lost my brother in a car accident when I was 18 years old. And when I heard that Ryan passed away and that Alex wanted to do this project, I was immediately drawn to it, just wanting to kind of address grief and be a part of a group of people that were really trying to solidify Ryan's legacy and make his life count for something more. That was something that I instantly wanted to be a part of. So so for Alex to hire me for that was just an incredible blessing. It's been an amazing experience.
And how long to this day was it has it been, I guess, since Ryan committed suicide?
It was 2 years this past July, so it's still pretty fresh.
Yeah, absolutely, especially somebody so young. You think about yourselves too. I do that all the time. I'll go back to think of life events or whatever, and it's like, holy cow, what if X would have happened, or what if this would have happened? And it's so crazy just to think how much things can change in a relatively short amount of time.
Well, and this was our second incident with losing a friend to suicide in college. So
sure.
Alex had to deliver two eulogies by the time that he was 21.
Was that based on your friendship with them, or do you feel like within your friend group, you're almost the de facto leader or speaker?
In many ways, you could say that.
There are these unspoken or even spoken. Sometimes people are like, what are we doing tonight? And they point to Bill. It's like, Bill, I mean, what are we doing tonight? It's one of those where it's, whether you realize it or not, sometimes people do look to you for that. And it's kind of a strange realization whenever you kind of see that.
I saw that after Ryan passed.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you say that about the plans, because that was Ryan, actually. Ryan
really?
Was the guy. Ryan was the social organizer.
Right.
I think that I took on the role of putting people on my back and trying to be strong for everybody in these tough situations.
Mm-hmm.
And they both meant a lot to me, and I'm very comfortable public speaking. And I was just honored to be able to give those eulogies. But it's definitely something I don't wish on anybody to have that on your resume before your 22nd birthday. It's wild.
I can't tell you how many times I've been a pallbearer just because I've been a decent sized human since I was like 12, right? It's not really that fun to get called on every single time. And it doesn't really, I don't know, it's not quite the same as speaking, but I can relate to that from that level where it's like 16, I've been a pallbearer like five times. Like, really?
It's Like the worst resume booster.
Yeah, not yeah. If we could find something, it's like, well, maybe leave that one off. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and Ryan was the glue of our friend group. He was the guy that everyone did look to. He was so universally liked, you know, and especially in college. I mean, when we were at Mizzou, we were in fraternities, and I mean,
what fraternity was that?
I was a Sigma Chi.
Mm-hmm.
Danny was a Beta. Ryan was a Pi Kap.
And we're talking about Ryan Candace.
Ryan Candace, yeah. Our friend who passed, was a Pi Kap.
Mm-hmm.
And so the interesting phenomenon at Mizzou, at least during my time there, was when you're a freshman, you meet all these new guys, your pledge brothers, and they're your boys. So you hang out with them. You hang out with your pledge class. And Ryan really broke that mold. Ryan was hanging out at Danny's frat house. Ryan was hanging out at my house. Ryan was friends with everyone. So everyone, you know, it was very hard for people to branch out of their friend groups at that time. But Ryan was well liked and in every single circle. So that made it even more shocking when he passed, because he was really one of the most popular kids I knew on campus. It really shook the campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. These pictures of people that, I mean, it may even be unfair to think of, that you think of somebody that did that. You're thinking, I mean, there is a stereotypical look to if somebody would be like, you know, I can't say I didn't see it coming. But to make it that much more shocking, it hurts that much more if it was somebody like, well, not him.
Right.
Yeah. And it just, ugh, it's terrible to hear that.
It's 100%. That's exactly my first thoughts. Like, Ryan was the last person I would have ever expected.
Sure.
And, you know, that thought right there among many really kind of launched this whole idea in the first place, because Ryan was really one of, you know, an all-around guy who had everything going for him seemingly, and I think he's a relatable story on many levels. A lot of people have a Ryan in their friend group. A lot of people have somebody who, you know, seemingly has it all. They're determined, bright future, very popular, good looking guy, and to see him be brought to that final act, it's a really powerful message to show that, you know, mental illness doesn't discriminate, and it really can happen to anyone.
Absolutely. And it's weird too. I don't know. Do you guys ever have this where like something cool will happen and then everybody's hitting you? Oh, that's great. Whatever that. And it's like stressed as hell right now. Like, what do you mean that's cool? But I think it's a bit of people wanting to be polite there, but they're also involved with you on another level. It's they think of themselves too. It's like, oh, well, this guy's got to be happy. I'm pissed off at work. He's doing whatever. Maybe it's professionally, socially, something like that. It is always interesting to me to gather people's perceptions, especially in a case like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of become ingrained into our culture, like this whole just like culture on, you know, social media and everything.
It's a great point, yeah.
You got to feel like you got to get out and extend yourself and make sure that you're maintaining relationships. But it's easier than ever now, but the moments are way more fleeting. And
absolutely.
They're so disingenuous sometimes. And I don't think that that's people's intentions, but you know, that's just kind of the way it is. You know?
Do you guys ever have anybody on social media you've probably communicated, tweeted, Facebooked, whatever, and I'm not even talking about being some scumbag directing stuff to girls, and they're in some messages. Say you can log a year, 2 years, and then you see them out, maybe a nod, maybe.
Oh, yeah, it's all
maybe,
good.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's it. And it's like, technically, we've talked to each other off and on for years now, and that is an interesting part of either society or culture that you can look at from this point of view, that it's saying like, we don't really have that much here despite logs of technical communication, which is tough. Maybe we need some weed or something to really jump into this. But it's it just, if you start thinking about that, it always just floors me and it doesn't bother me. I just laugh if that happens, and because it does all the time.
Yeah. The value of face-to-face communication and you know, even things like a handwritten note, compared to what you see today on social and stuff, it's just so much more valuable, and I get so much more from that than I do from somebody liking my post.
I don't know, man. It's pretty fire pictures you're throwing up there.
Exactly. Got to hit that number count.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. So what made you guys reach out to Nate? So Nate has a background, respected filmmaker here in St. Louis, and obviously you said it was important to you, given your past and the things that you've dealt with. Who made the first call, or what prompted that reach out, Alex?
Well, actually, I came up with this idea in my my really run down Columbia house.
I've had a few of those. Oh, yeah.
And I was really kind of hesitant about sharing my idea because it was kind of outrageous at the time to think of it.
Yeah, and a creative endeavor, which, Nate, you know this more than any of us here, it can be a little scary to get people on board with it. It's like, you want to do what?
Exactly.
Even if it's for a noble cause like this.
That's exactly what I was thinking at the time. I was very reluctant to show my friends, but one of the first people who was there was one of my pledge brothers who goes back with Nate to childhood.
Sure.
And I was just writing out a little email that I was, I guess, going to send to my friends about this idea initially when it happened. And he's like, what are you doing? And I told him what was going on. And he was like, oh, dude, you got to call Nate Townsend.
Yeah.
Because he's known Nate and his work. And so I kept that in the back of my head the whole time. But at that point, we had $0 and had absolutely no idea what we were doing.
Right.
But a few months later, you know, we had overnight almost $20,000 in the bank and still had no idea what we were doing.
How'd that happen?
Well, that's the flip side. You know, we just kind of ragged on social media, but it was the power of social media that
absolutely
got us there.
It has its perks.
Yeah.
GoFundMe, right?
Yes. GoFundMe. It was just the power of sharing. It was all pretty much Facebook-based. Like, we had a little Twitter, but it was mainly Facebook. And, you know, parents sharing, friends sharing, and all of a sudden it just skyrocketed.
Yeah, I remember getting that call from Brad. You or Brad. It was probably Brad. Back in those really early stages before you guys had any money. And it was, you know, and it was a couple of your friends had reached out to me about doing this. And it was always kind of like, you know, okay, yeah, you know, sounds cool. That sounds like a cool documentary.
In your world, that happens 17 times a day?
It definitely happens a lot, especially from St. Louis, you know. There's so few filmmakers here that,
yeah.
You know, when somebody wants to do some filmmaking endeavor, I usually get a call.
Varying degrees of importance, right?
And you know, I had heard about Ryan and it was definitely something I was interested in, but just another one of those things where a lot of people don't understand how much money these things cost. And
that is, that's something I'm personally finding out too, because there's a difference between, and this is, I get it, it's their business model, whatever, the 17-second graphic hit that a company will pay for to air after a Cardinals game or something, and then something that is put together correctly, looks great, could maybe work on a national scale. That business side of it is so interesting to me, especially being in St. Louis, very shallow pool of people to pick mm-hmm. from. I think there's some great people here that do it, but it's that sales conversation, obviously for me personally, that sales conversation, it's like, no, dummy. Like, we're not talking about some garbage thing that your teenage kids are going to make fun of here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, so I told Andrew Berry, who was the first guy who called me, another one of their friends, when they get money, you know, give me a call and we can talk about what we might be able to do.
Sure.
And just totally forgot about it, you know, and went on and I get a call at like 1 a.m. and it was in California. I was finishing up film school and, I get a call from, it was either Andrew Berry or Brad. And it was like, you may want to, seriously consider doing this project. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, go to this GoFundMe page. And I click online and these guys had like 30 grand in like 2 or 3 days. And it was just mind blowing. And as soon as I saw that, I called Alex Lindley. And I was just like, you know, please let me direct this thing. You know,
yeah, because it's real at that point.
Exactly. It's
like if you initially hear that same, oh, this guy cares about money. No, he needs it to work and you need people to make it work. And you don't want to attach your name to some just abomination, whether it's a good cause or not.
And I don't think that we were actually, you know, when we put out the GoFundMe, when we put everything out, it was a bit of a leap of faith. So when it became real, I think we all just kind of took a step back and looked at each other like, I guess we're moving forward now.
Yeah. So and what a great feeling too, to honor Ryan's memory, to help people that would maybe have similar issues, and then Carolyn as well, who you guys lost, to have somebody like Nate, who's experienced, and you said you were finishing film school at the time, mm-hmm. jumping in on that and being excited about it. I mean, from a creative side or just a fulfillment side, to me, that's what it's all about.
absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and I think these guys wanted to make a feature with that amount of money, right? I mean, wasn't that kind of the initial idea? These guys really didn't know. None of us did. You know, it was kind of like, here's the money.
Right now, to this day, despite being as organized and everything, your end entire thing may be something way different in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, initially, the only plan was to make a film. That was it. You know, we didn't really know exactly how we wanted to go about it. And I suggested we use that money to make a short film and then use that as a platform to raise a lot more money to try to do a feature length film, a 2 hour long film that could really be in contention in film festivals. And, mental health and suicide is a very, it's a topic that people are starting to talk about a lot more. It's a topic that, it's a good time to make this film.
I agree. It makes me question too. We're here downtown at our offices. I lived downtown for a couple of years. Walking my dogs was a chore, and there's a personal safety standard to it too. I'm not afraid some mean gangster is going to come shoot me in the face. It's not my worry. Someone that's schizophrenia has a piece of glass and they think I'm somebody they shouldn't be there. Why are these people not being helped? And that's just one version of maybe what you guys are focusing on, but it's a major problem. And it's crazy to me, as you grow up, a homeless person, and that's just what I'm focusing on in this, isn't somebody with I just hopped the train, I've got my bag on my stick. Somebody who can't take care of themselves because of some affliction that they have. And it's crazy that we just walk by that every day. And again, I don't know what to do. I mean, I think it lies on people's shoulders that are maybe above my pay grade, but it just, it's crazy about that. And then for you guys to tackle this and put it out in the open, that young people, seemingly college is best part of most people's lives, I would say, if you really look at it, made these decisions, and then to tackle that, what made it happen, and to raise awareness. Again, just want to commend you on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, for us, I think it's this idea that, college, it is the best time of your life, but when you come in as a freshman, it's also, the most highly stimulating and stressful time of your life. For a lot of people, first time away from mom and dad, higher level of academics.
You're trying to
meet new people for the first time. Most of the time might be trying to join a fraternity or a sorority, might be trying to join organizations because, if you're not competitive, you're not getting an internship, and then the whole spiral goes down. There's so many things.
It's crazy too, because you can achieve a lot, but then you can also... it's crazy. You're right. How those are put on, those expectations or thoughts are grafted onto people saying like, hey, this could be it. And maybe somebody with something that hasn't been diagnosed or properly addressed, to them, that's 1,000 times worse than it would be for somebody else.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had friends who would, when I'd be talking to them, they'd say, well, if I don't do well on this test, then I'm not going to do well on this class. If I'm not going to do well in this class, I'm not going to, get this and this. And basically, taking one event and saying that it's going to impact the rest of their lives and things like that, it's no way to think. And that's a very specific example. But really for us, it's just getting this message out there that, college is, it's still a stressful time no matter what. And there's no shame in reaching out and asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
Not to pivot too far away from the documentary, but we kind of have everything going hand in hand right now. So we're also a 501c3. And what's giving us legs beyond the documentary is an organization that we're working on officially branding at Mizzou called Wake Up, where we're working to get kids in college professionally trained by mental health experts to go and be outlets for kids who may need help. Because a lot of the time kids... they aren't motivated to go talk to like a psychologist or something like that because they're, in their 40s and 50s, they don't understand what's actually going on. The environment where kids are in college right now has shifted so dramatically in the past few years.
And I'm, first of all, I applaud you guys for taking action. I'm personal. Nothing drives me more crazy than people just screaming with no solution and blaming people for things. How do you guys address this? And I assume you have, it could be very early. I'm not trying to spring this on you guys here. How do you guys address liability in that situation? Because the first part that I think of is, that's amazing. You can go talk. It's something easier. Second part is, what happens whenever somebody that should be seeing, like if we call this level one, this person should be seeing a level three, like a psychologist, something like that. Is there anything, have you guys had the chance to look into that? That worries me because like every good thing, something will try and throw a wrench in it. And I'm looking at three smart young professional guys that are doing something fantastic. That just worries me. The second I hear that, I'm like, there's got to be fail safes in place, right?
We're not isolating ourselves from other organizations.
And you're not calling yourself, you're not saying, hey, come see Dr. Danny.
Exactly. Yeah. Not like the Charlie Brown, the doctor is in type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we feel, and the people in the organization that are currently there at Mizzou, you know, if they feel like somebody is in serious need of help, you know, they have the
protocols and
to go make a recommendation to get somebody else on the phone, you know. And honestly, I think part of what's good about it is these kids are going to somebody who they can empathize with because they're growing up in the same environment and doing this exact same thing, which is college. But if somebody who they trust is going to say, no, I think you should talk to somebody professional, it's kind of that third party advocacy there.
That's great. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. There's almost a hey, I get it factor to what you're building. So, Alex, with your involvement in this, and maybe this isn't a question for you, as far as the film, everything else that's going with it, the actual, I guess, running program at Mizzou for Wake Up, how do we get it to be fully functional and delivering results?
Well, that's a good question for Morgan Domion. Morgan's in Africa right now doing service work, but she, Danny, and I have.
Of course she is. That's great.
That's literally the kind of person she is.
That is her.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? That is fantastic.
So she's the one who's founded this model.
Yeah.
And it's her baby. But I know that, you know, she has taken it incredibly seriously. They have these bylaws, literally a model to put in place, to put in all sorts of universities across the nation. And she has an action committee. She still has contact with kids at Mizzou and gets them the training that they need.
Yeah.
And the model that they have in place now, I mean, for what it's designed to do, I think it's efficient in what it's doing. They train these kids to, first of all, they're there to raise awareness, host events, to bring that message out.
Right. Yeah.
That's, I think, really what their main focus is right now. We don't have the data to show you that.
There's not one charity barbecue you can throw to make everybody start thinking about these things. So that's phenomenal. And those are, I struggle with that too. Let's lay the things we don't think about out before we start just rushing into this. And to have that kind of infrastructure behind it, I would hope, sets this up for just a life-changing future.
I think that, you know, so like I said, you know, they have these events that really bring attention to campus, and these events are, that, you know, they're not like a barbecue. Like, they're actually events that really kind of make you stop and think.
Yeah.
Like, they will have 500 kids go to the quad and let off lanterns into the sky for every person that they know that they've lost, and that's a powerful message.
It's huge.
So these events, they really get the campus thinking. And it brings kind of a place for people to come to, and they see you on campus and they can discuss things with you. And then the kids are trained to not become the psychologist and have them sit on the couch and tell them their problems. They're there to recognize if there's a crisis situation. And if there is, they foster them to the right places, because, you know, some kids are reluctant to just go to a stranger. You know, they'll go to their friend first. And like Danny said, if they say, you know, I think you should talk to someone, or they go and they get somebody for them. That's really where the teeth are. And Mizzou's project right now, that Wake Up chapter, is really the model. And it's really the test. It's the lab rat, per se.
Yeah.
And so when we refine that, when Morgan really sees the positives of that group, she's going to use exactly what she can from that model and branch that out. I mean, we're going to start a new one at my law school in a few weeks.
Where's that?
SLU, SLU Law.
I've heard of that.
It's right there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one.
Big blue building right there.
That one, the giant one. Yeah.
Big commute to work.
So I mean, it's in its, this project's in its primitive stages.
Sure.
And this is phase two. This comes after the documentary.
Yeah.
But I am very confident that Morgan has this model in place, and it really is going to help people, because people come to they were called Mizzou Suicide, Student Suicide Prevention Coalition. We're calling Wake Up Chapters now.
Yeah.
Confusing.
And what's, go ahead.
But So these kids recognize these kids on campus.
Right.
And, you know, I can personally attest to this. Kids will come to us and say, hey, thank you for giving us this voice. Thank you for opening up this dialogue. And I've had kids come to me with advice about one of their friends, and immediately I'll foster them and send them to the proper place. I'll send them to reputable mental health hospitals or
right.
professionals I know of. I'm not going to be the one to diagnose it. I have no idea how to handle that, but I can make them feel comfortable in my judgment and sending them to the yes. right places.
I love that. And it's weird because I have this internal struggle. I'm hearing this stuff and I'm like, how much did I pay in taxes last year? Like, why isn't there somebody innovative within the state or national government doing stuff like this? Maybe they do. Maybe I'm being harsh on it. But I also see a lot of things being messed up. I'm from Farmington, Missouri. I feel like 1/10 of their mental hospital is only in use right now because of cutbacks and things like that. So I see this, but then the other side of me is like, stay the F out of it. You're going to screw it up anyway from the government. And it's great to see private citizens like yourselves addressing this. You're literally helping out your neighbor, helping out the person next to you too. And I do have a question too, and this is for all three of you even. So I have a friend that that committed suicide as well in Colombia 2 years back. His name is David Tenney, the most gregarious, cool guy you could ever meet. Amateur boxer, had like 30 fights, which I think about like, well, maybe that was some of it, concussions and things like that. Tough dude, entrepreneur himself, loved like doing really nice things for people, had a moment, had an argument, took a gun, shot himself. There are these times whenever you think like, man, I wish I could like wake him up and tell him what he did and then wake up. Yeah. Tell him what he did. And he would be like, I did what? Or like, man, that's not how I wanted this to look. Do you feel that your friends that you've lost or family members, things like that, do you feel they'd be proud of what this is? And do you think this is something that they would get behind? That's just so important, I feel like, it has to be to you guys to know that you're not only honoring them, but if you know in your heart of hearts, you could actually ask these people like, hey, what do you think of this? Would they be behind what you're doing?
Yeah, I think definitely. For me, I actually had an extra incident. My dad committed suicide when I was in fourth grade. And he suffered from bipolar disorder. And so what you were saying, you know, kind of waking them up and saying, I did what? He had those episodes where he would just kind of either be really high or really low on an emotional level. And so he was at one of those super lows when everything happened. And so, yeah, I have no doubt that he would be completely on board because at the time he wasn't, you know, he kept working through his illness and worked, and he would go in the hospital and then he would get out and then immediately be back at work. And that's just not the way to treat it. And so I think that, you know, we're not directly addressing something like that, so to speak, but I think that would definitely be a byproduct of what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
And so definitely. And what else I think of is, you know, Ryan's family and how we've interacted with them and how they feel.
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't dare embark on this if it would have been something that my best friend Ryan wouldn't have wanted. I think that he made an act, you know, and when you're having those thoughts and going through things, it's like there's something in your head and you are only thinking about the most primitive survival instincts. You know,
you're gonna feed that hunger to whatever's going on.
You're not thinking long term. And Ryan was so loved and had so much going for him and such a bright future that I can almost guarantee you that if he could have woken up that next day,
right,
he would have been.
Yeah,
and that's
my bad. It sounds so crass. Oh, my bad, guys. My bad. Yeah, I mean, seriously, I think of my buddy David. I'm not kidding you. I was all he liked to. He was a pleasure guy. He liked to go have fun. He'd have a couple drinks. He could be in sales. He was running the train in like outside of Hallsville in Columbia. It was like a dinner train thing. He was so proud that he'd made it profitable. He was getting ownership, all this stuff. And then this stuff happened. And I was like, it's tough to think about, but I don't know. Maybe that offers some solace as well to think like, hey, this wasn't some monster. This is somebody you loved. This is somebody that made a snap, maybe not a snap decision, but made a decision in that place that you guys are talking about. That's just not, you want to prevent that. Right. And I hope, and I feel like that's what you guys are doing.
I think that Ryan was in one of those places.
Yeah.
obviously, and if he were to have been able to get adequate help, could have got out of it. You know, many, many people suffering with mental illness, they can get treated. They yeah. can, but are the resources available? Do they want to get treated? And in Ryan's
case,
that's
a major thing. The want, I mean, you can do that with a lot of people. An employee that just you've tell 20 times, if you do this again, you're gone.
Right.
A coworker, a friend, a girlfriend or boyfriend that you're like, I don't like this. This needs to change. And then, you know, they have to want to do it.
And the want, a big roadblock in that way is the stigma.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, Ryan and I,
there's jobs that you can't get. You can't get government clearances with certain things.
Even though, I mean, one in four Americans suffers from a diagnosable mental illness in a year. Yet it's still so stigmatized. And it's very evident in Ryan's situation because we both lost Carolyn. We both, our whole friend group lost Carolyn.
Right.
We talked about it. You know, we cried about it. We asked, why the hell did this happen? And he still did it.
Yeah.
And to me,
could not be a worse time, I feel like, to deal like that, which you guys highlight very well in your message.
I think that it says a whole lot that after going through that grieving process with Carolyn, seeing what it does to loved ones, the fact that he didn't reach out, Ryan wasn't a selfish guy, he was selfless. The fact that he didn't reach out was because he was at such a place and the stigma is so severe that even after experiencing that and knowing that he, you know, has been there, what people have been through in that situation, he couldn't reach out because it's such a stigma. No one wants to be labeled as crazy or different or weird. And if you, you know, a lot of people will see someone who they know has a mental illness and they'll treat them differently. They'll treat them as if they're lesser than them.
Sure.
And even more amplified at Mizzou in the fraternity situation is you cannot show weakness. It's sad. You have to be Mr. Macho tough guy.
If you wear the wrong t-shirt in college, you could take heat for years.
You get shit for it. Exactly. You'll be t-shirt guy.
Yeah.
So it's this expectations of just perfection and manliness, and it doesn't really translate well to guys, especially like Ryan, who are going through those things.
Right. And especially whenever you're that social, on that social level that you described him as being, I'm the guy. I can't do this, or I can't go talk to somebody about this.
Exactly.
I mean, those are the feelings I'm certainly he felt. And that's tough to analyze that from the point that we're up to. But Nate, with you putting this together, your experience with past films, obviously I'm sure you have a million goals moving forward. You're a young guy with some great work under your belt already. What is your directive or main goal, and how do you deliver, how do you translate this to viewers, what these guys are working so hard to put together and get out there? What's the most effective? And you can go technical, take it from a film perspective, or philosophical even, with this with the project that you're working on them on Project Wake Up with the documentary style, or if you guys do a longer form thing, what are some of the most important points to translate this message to the public or to family members even?
Well, you actually touched on it earlier when you mentioned that there's a discrepancy between mental health and the services offered by hospitals. Mm-hmm. And there's a serious disconnect between the health services, whether it be hospital or various doctors, and treating mental health. So we want to figure out what is perpetuating the stigma and go after that. So the short film was about Alex and Danny and this group of friends rallying together to make Ryan's life and Carolyn's life matter and to try to address the stigma. Now, the feature film, we want to be relatable and communicatable on a national and international level. We want people who have no stake in mental health and suicide to want to go see this documentary.
How many people all of a sudden care about killer whales?
Exactly.
There's your example.
Yeah. We literally have used that example, and we want this to be the next Blackfish.
Do it.
Right. Yeah. The difference is these are human lives.
And we
a great point.
We want to find out what's happening below the surface. We don't want to just have people, you know, come see this movie and all of a sudden you're going to realize, you know, that mental health has a huge stigma behind it. There has to be something specific that's causing these things and perpetuating it. So we want to go after that. So there's going to be a lot of kind of investigative journalism going on, I think, in this next phase.
And this could change too and everything, but just you guys' temperaments and the sincerity in what you're doing, this doesn't sound like some kind of, we're going to blame suicide as a whole in this country or world on one thing. It's like, hey, you're kind of going against the status quo here, that you're actually, you seem like you're trying to actually solve something, which rarely happens in a lot of things. A lot of talk, a lot of grandiose gestures done. It sounds like you guys are trying to actually get to the meat of these things to make an impact. It's what it all comes back to, right? If you want this to be at a festival in Austin or San Francisco, New York, wherever, I'm assuming it's because you want more people to know and feel the same way you guys do about actionable items with this issue.
Right. And you know, and we're definitely not trying to finger point here. You know, it's an incredibly complex issue and spans across many topics. But, you know, we want to address and expose how big of an issue it is and how few resources are being allocated to it. And we want to understand why that is. You know, I don't think that there's a specific person or thing to blame, but there is a serious disconnect institutionally. And we want to figure out why that is and show the world why that is.
No, that makes sense. And it just makes me think, it's like, okay, well, if there was a hungered, crazed bear living behind one of your walls, you wouldn't throw a cracker at it to calm it down and not have it removed, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, because essentially that's kind of what you're looking at with a lot of the solutions. Like, here's something. Go ahead. Yeah. All right.
And just saying it is not, you know, just telling people about this is not enough. You could go talk to anybody about these things.
Yeah.
And they understand. This is not like news to anybody. That's why we need to uncover something. You know, that's why we need to dig deeper, because everyone knows this is a problem. They just don't care enough, or they're not dealing with it on a personal level enough to care to make that change and to be that change. So we want to find something that is relatable and will cause everybody to want to make that change. You know, and usually that will be a result of angering and, you know, exposing some sort of wrongdoing to kind of infuriate the viewer and, mm-hmm. and cause that viewer to want to make a change. You cited Blackfish. Well, you know, they created a villain in that film, and it's true. You know, with SeaWorld and all that, and people all of the sudden wanted to save the whales as a result of that movie. So we want to do the same thing. We don't want to create a villain, but we want to show the audience that there's a reason for this, and it can be changed and it can be fixed.
No, that makes perfect sense. So if we're doing outreach and you guys are doing things like this, keeping it moving, how can people help?
At this point, you can come to our fundraising events. You can help us reach this goal because these projects are unbelievably expensive. We have raised over $100,000, and that's a drop in the water. For a production like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, to me, a guy who has, you know, who's in law school and has a few $100 in his bank account,
right.
That pisses me off.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. It's that, you know, that's nothing. And we're
what's your other option? Give up?
That's not an option. But you know, the point is that's the reality of it, and we are working hard to fundraise so we can make this project. We have one shot. We have one shot at this documentary, and we've worked for 2 years on it, and we're not going to screw it up. So what we need now is financial resources, and we need help with fundraising. And once we get to that point, where we can arm Nate with the tools he needs to make this film, I really see it making a huge impact, because we have something that isn't happening. We've got a group of 20 young 20 somethings who have experienced some tragedies, turning that around, and we have a real passion, and we're not just here to give our big monologue. We're here to start a dialogue and really make a change, and we're not going to stop. So at this point, we need funds, and we have events coming up. We hope that we can be in production by 2017,
yeah,
late 2017, and get this going.
There's no doubt in our minds that we're going to make a great, impactful film that can that will be in serious contention at the best film festivals. We can do that. You know, this team has the drive and determination and passion that I haven't seen ever with any project I've ever worked on.
I'm in a unique position, just having been starting an AM radio show at 31 while I owned another business during the day. Nobody wants to work. And I mean that. People go through the motions, things like that. It cracks me up at the people that jabber on about, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm like, either you do it or you don't. And there's the reality to that. And then people get their feelings hurt if you're like, well, you're not doing it. Like, what are you doing? With this group, and this sounds so pathetic in the grand scheme of things, the mere fact that you're doing outreach, you've been covered by the Huffington Post, local papers, Riverfront Times, different things like that. The fact that you have put together 2 years of action on something you deem to be important puts you 10 million miles ahead of the status quo. So short of giving yourself an applause right now, feel good about that. And just from an outsider's perspective, I know Danny listened to the show and things like that. So, but it's not as if we're covering these kind of topics every day. We're happy to talk about anything and shed light to an issue like this, but pat yourselves on the back. Don't stop that you guys are even doing things like this. We're here on a Saturday. We're all spending our morning talking about this, but congratulations that you're able to just put that work ethic and care into something like this, because I hear that in your voice, it still may not be everything you want it to be, but there's no way that this isn't a version of what you want it to be. And that's just puts you so far ahead of, again, the status quo of people, not even just your age, people in general, plenty of lazy 50-year-olds out there too.
Thank you. Yeah, we really appreciate that. And just to really kind of add on to that for a second, I think, you know, we all recognize that big talk is something you got to treat with skepticism. But for us, being early 20-year-olds, I have no doubt that we're under a second layer of skepticism, because
absolutely,
nobody thinks that, you know, we can get this done. But that's a lot of the reason why we put together a 13-minute teaser and prove, here's a sample of what we can put together.
Beautifully shot. It gets the message across.
Exactly.
Teaser does it an injustice. I mean, I'm sure people like Nate, it's like, yeah, it's a teaser. Somebody else hears it, oh, cute. You know, no, this is very impactful, well thought out, put together 13-minute video for that.
And we realize that, you know, if we want to take the next step, you know, $30,000 is a lot for a group of 20-year-olds or 20 to 23 and kids who are just kind of getting started. They've never navigated this without someone like Nate. And so we needed something tangible to get that second layer of crowdfunding started, because we knew that people weren't going to buy in unless we had something to present to the table. So that always felt good. But I mean, now we're getting closer to round two for filming. So
we'll follow them at projectwakeup.org. Guys, any events or anything we need to, I mean, it's all on the website. You can check it out. You can donate at the website. The event's coming up. Follow them online. Again, Facebook page has a lot of followers. And then any advice to people just outside of helping you guys do this, just to be aware, right?
Be aware and realize that you don't you'll never understand the burden that other people are carrying. So just, you know, treat people the way that you want to be treated, and you could end up making somebody's day and not ruining it.
Absolutely. That's a great note. You guys are doing great work. I'm excited to see this move forward, and it's not to say I'm excited to see you finish this up. There'll be aspects to it, but this sounds like a lifelong endeavor, and I wish you the best with it. In any way we can help, let us know, guys. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for
having us. Thank
you
very much.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it.
Guys from Project Wake Up, again, projectwakeup.org. Check out their events. Donate and support these guys. These are great dudes working on a very, very important project. So again, projectwakeup.org.